Public meeting calendar website. Thank you for your patience if we run into any technical issues as we simultaneously conduct this meeting in person and electronically. Today's agenda contains two opportunities for public comment. There is time allotted for public comment on regulations and then for general public comment near the end of the meeting. Sign-up sheets are available on the table by the door. If you did not previously sign up to provide public comment via email and are logged in through the meeting URL, please type your name, organization, and comment topic in the chat box now. If you have joined through the call-in option and wish to make verbal public comment, please log in online through the meeting URL. As required by statute, this meeting is being recorded, and the recording will be available on our webpage within 7 business days of this meeting. When voting on items for action, I will ask all those in favor say aye, and we will do a roll call vote only if there's dissent. Also, as a reminder, please, when making a motion or speaking, state your name. We'll move on to item B, roll call of the state board members. Before we take roll, I wish to thank the administrative staff, Jen Rizel and Courtney Teague, for assisting this evening. We also have Erin French. And so Ms. French, please do a roll call of the Delaware State Board members.
Reverend Banks.
Banks, present.
Dr. Griffin.
Present.
Mr. Gunzer.
Present.
Dr. Marinucci.
Present.
Mr. Sheehan.
Present.
Mr. Simmons.
He's on his way.
Ms. Stevens.
Present.
Dr. Zabo is absent.
All right, we have a quorum. I will note we also have the board's Executive Secretary, Secretary of Education, Cindy Martin, and Deputy Attorney General Alex Corbin, along with State Board staff Erin French, participating in today's meeting. Item C, approval of the agenda. The board's agenda was posted on May 14th. Ms. Rizel, are there any changes to the agenda?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, is there a motion to approve the agenda for today's meeting as presented?
So moved.
Motion by Reverend Banks, is there a second?
Second, Stevens.
Second by Vice President Stevens. Any discussion? All right, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Item D, approval of the April 16th regular meeting minutes. The April 16th meeting minutes were provided to the board for review in advance of this meeting. Are there any additions or deletions to the minutes? Great. Seeing none, is there a motion to approve the April 16th regular meeting minutes as presented?
Marinucci, so moved.
Motion by Dr. Marinucci, is there a second?
Banks, second.
Second by Reverend Banks. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions?
Abstain.
I believe the motion still carries 4 votes. Actually, since we did not have unanimous, we should do a roll call. Can you call roll on that motion for the approval of the minutes since we had an abstention?
Reverend Banks.
Yes.
Dr. Griffin.
Yes.
Mr. Gunter.
Not voting.
Dr. Marinucci.
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Simmons. Ms. Stevens.
Abstain.
And Dr. Sabo.
Non-voting. Okay, so we did have 4 yes votes, so the minutes are approved. Next up, item 2, presentations. We are going to start with a presentation on chronic absenteeism. So we have Laura Saperstein, Ruth Huey, and Deputy Secretary Adam Schott who will present information and data on chronic absenteeism. Did I get that correct?
Yeah, I'll kick us off.
Okay. Thank you, Deputy Secretary Scott. My apologies.
Great. So good evening, President Sheehan and members of the board. Hi. I'm happy to be with you tonight. Thank you for giving us a chance to come and talk about an important topic, chronic absenteeism in Delaware. And so I am President Sheehan just said, Cora Scott, Deputy Secretary for Performance Support. And we have our lovely team here with us, Adam Schott, Associate Secretary, and Laura Saperstein and Ruth Huey. So I'll kick us off a little bit, say a few things, and then turn it over to the team for presentation. But we have talked before about app attendance in schools, and we know that attendance isn't just tracking data and numbers. It really is about opportunities for kids. If students aren't in school, they don't have an opportunity to access learning. They don't have an opportunity to access connections with adults, with their peers, extracurricular experiences. So we know that attendance means much more than just being present. We know that learning is compounded over time. And so if students miss even just a few days a month, I think sometimes as families or parents or we may think it doesn't compound, but it does. It impacts over time their learning and their ability to meet those benchmarks. When we think about third grade reading, eighth grade math, college and career readiness, all of those things are really critical. And so we at the department, the next slide jumps into our strategic plan. Thank you. And so we at the department have, I know the secretary has shared before, we've launched our strategic plan. And one of our key priorities and targets is around chronic absenteeism in our schools. And so we are focused on looking at the attendance of our students. We know that, again, as I said before, that's connected to reading proficiency, math proficiency, and that readiness. And so we want to look at students, the root cause of why students are not attending school, and then see what we can do to support and strategize for the state as a whole. And so the goal of trying to reduce chronic absenteeism, again, isn't just about numbers or monitoring. It's going to take a collective effort, the school level, maybe if it's a district, that level, the community, parents, everyone involved. And so we know that we've got to, like I said, get to that root cause to figure out what strategies need to be in place. And so we have taken that very seriously. We have publicly put out our metric there that you can see on the slide, making that reduction. And so our presentation for tonight is really just an overview of some of the statewide data around where we are as a state with chronic absenteeism. We have a few LEAs that are going to share some of the promising practices that they are implementing in their schools. And then we will close out with just sharing a little bit about our plans forward and how we're gonna engage with our LEAs to support them going forward. So that's what we're gonna do this evening. So I will kick it over to Laura first.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Laura Saperstein. I am the Education Associate over Accountability, which resides in the Office of Assessment and Accountability. And I'm just going to give you some background, as Dr. Scott said, on our accountability data. Accountability is part of our DSSF framework, our Delaware School Success Framework, which is under ESSA law, the Every Student Succeeds Act. So if you go to the next slide, this is really our definition for chronic absenteeism. We measure chronic absenteeism on a student level. And so what we are looking at are the number of days a student is absent for total membership days. And I'll call to your attention the first slide that we just passed. It said that our state data was 15% chronic absenteeism. When we look at data as a part of our accountability framework, we are strictly looking at the dates between September 30th and May 31st. We call that full academic year, so we're not considering, you know, the beginning part of the year, the ending June and August. So you're going to see a little bit different rates when we go to the next slide. So this is our accountability framework, and it does point out to you that On-track attendance, which really is the inverse of chronic absenteeism, it's roughly 5 to 10% of any framework, given whether it's an elementary middle school model or if it's a high school model, but it does reside in the indicator, the school quality and student success. So it's one of the measures within that indicator. So depending on if we're looking at high school model or elementary middle, it has a little bit different of a weight. You can go to the next slide. As Dr. Scott pointed out, on-track attendance is really important because we know that it is linked to school success. And we do have our LEAs here tonight that are going to speak a little bit more about their successes in getting the students back in the classroom. But when you talk about multi-tiered systems of support and understanding what students and families need in order for the students to be present full day and not be absent, we have our foundational supports, and those are things like a physical and emotionally healthy and supportive environment, a safe environment. We're talking about adult and student well-being and emotional competence, academic challenge and engagement for our students. Relationships are very important, and students feeling belonging and a sense of connection to their school. So these are strategies that we want to see at the very foundation of our system of support. So that would be where you see the green and all, that's what we want to provide to all students. But then when students start to become absent, maybe missing 10% or 19% of their entire school year, is when we start getting into some of the more focused strategies of what the school could be doing, whether it's assisting with transportation, assisting with healthy and nutritional meals. Those supports might be needed for some students to actually help them get to school, and so their academics are better. And then once we see students missing 20% or more of the school year, our tier three strategies, our more intensive strategies. And later on this evening, not only our LEAs, but Dr. Huey is going to be talking about those. Moving on to the next slide is when we start to get into our data. Again, I mentioned the full academic year. So this is really our accountability data. We're starting with the year, our first full year coming back from COVID, and where we had roughly 23% of our students were chronically absent, meaning they were missing 15 days or more between September 30th and May 31st. We have seen a decrease over the past several years. What you're seeing in the data, you might recognize it as a small blip going in the opposite direction. However, I want to say that within the past 2 years, our school systems have switched to a new new SIS, the student information system. And so where we were in eSchool, we are now in Infinite Campus. And so where there was, and it's been a 2 year kind of rotation. Now all of the schools are on the new SIS, but we recognize that some of this data might be because of the tracking and the way our old systems and the new systems were talking. So this could be an anomaly and it still could have gone down. But again, you see, it looks like it went up a little bit. We don't know. So going on to the next slide, I just wanted to point out that when we look at chronic absenteeism, this is where we're seeing it. This is a slide showing our elementary, our middle, and our high school. The way that Infinite Campus tracks attendance is any student that has missed more than half of a day It gets marked as a full day absence. So when you look at the high schoolers, they seem to be our most absent. But the way we track this in accountability, and this is really important for our LEAs to connect and get us the right data, what we are looking for in accountability are absence codes that are marked to what we call state group excused and state group unexcused. In chronic absenteeism, we don't care if it's an excused absence or it's an unexcused absence. It's just absence. But we don't want things like field trips to be marked as as a full day absence. So again, high schoolers may actually be the ones that are more chronically absent, but the data also might be telling us that some of the LEA codes are not mapped correctly. In other words, if there are students, high school students, that are doing work-based learning, and if those codes aren't mapped correctly, it's going to mark them as absent. So we really need to ensure that our LEA data is accurate, and that this is, but high schoolers are absent a lot, so it could be true. Moving on to the next slide. When we presented to the state board about 18 months ago, we showed the slide on the, or excuse me, the graph on the left of this slide. And what this is actually showing you is 3 years worth of data, but it's showing you where chronic absenteeism is showing up the most. So when you look at September, students are new to the school year. They might not be missing as many days. But then in the winter months, absenteeism starts to tick up a lot. And that could be due to illness, winter illness, colds and flu and things like that. It seems to go down a lot in the spring. And then we have this jump up at the end of the year. We did another bar graph now looking at the right side of the screen, and this is the past 3 years. So again, it's still that 3 year trend data, but it does show a difference. And I think that the difference could be because the one on the left is accounting for 2022 data, where again, where we were seeing a lot of absenteeism due to COVID. And now the one on the right is just 23 through 25. So it could be a little bit more accurate. But that's the average absences by month. And this is important for schools to look at, because there are certain strategies where they might be recognizing how to bring their students back into the classroom. If they know that November, December, January are months where students are going to be absent, maybe they do a health campaign and remind students and families to wash their hands, or, you know, whatever they could do. But, you know, at the end of the year, we want to say messages like finish strong, you know, don't just bail out at the end of the year. You know, we want a complete academic school year. So again, just looking at what are the differences between the months? What could the schools be doing? What strategies could they be working on at that time? Next slide. So that's the end of the data. I'm now going to turn it over to Dr. Huey to talk about the strategies.
Yep, so that's me. So good evening, everyone. I'm Dr. Ruth Huey. I'm the Education Associate for Out-of-School Time Programs and Students Experiencing Homelessness. And we can go to the next slide. I'm going to talk a little bit about, on the state level, our supports. And I'm a part of the student support team, and our office works closely with school systems to provide guidance, collaboration, and professional learning opportunities focused on improving student attendance and reducing chronic absenteeism. As the department liaison for the Delaware Visiting Teachers, I facilitate ongoing collaboration through monthly meetings throughout the school year. The meetings provide opportunities for networking, sharing best practices, discussing trends, and addressing emerging attendance concerns. Sometimes we do have judges from JP court or from family court in attendance at some of our meetings. But we also support professional development, and one that's featured here on the screen screen was a previous training session that we had with the agencies that are listed. It was Rethinking School Attendance Interventions, and this had sessions focused on restorative student-centered approaches and cross-agency, as you can see here, collaborations to support attendance improvement efforts. And additionally, I've been working with the LEA truancy teams, such as like Colonial School District, where there's truancy team has partnered with their out-of-school time program, including those that have 21st century community learning center programs to re-engage the students, get them back in school, to help them get some additional academic supports, and also engage the family in family engagement opportunities. You can go to the next slide. So another important statewide support included our partnership with Attendance Works, which is a nationally recognized nonprofit whose goal is to get students back into school every day through school, family, and community collaboration of proactively monitoring the data and removing barriers. This was designed to help schools develop a comprehensive data-driven approach to improve student attendance. And it was a proactive approach that aligned back and tied to MTSS, using data to identify needs, implementing universal prevention strategies, targeted interventions, and engaging families and community partners. And you can see here the three different classes that were held, which featured whole school engagement strategies, early intervention, and partnering to make a difference. We can go to the next slide. So as we mentioned earlier, we have two LEAs to share their promising practices with you this evening, and we want to move forward in identifying strategies and resources to support our LEAs, and we want to learn from them what is working. So our first speaker tonight, I believe, is Hope from the Brandywine School District.
Good evening to members of the State Board of Education and members of the department. I'd like to introduce myself. I'm Hope Moffitt, the Supervisor of Assessment and Accountability in Brandywine School District. It's a pleasure to be here with you tonight, and I think you can go down to the next slide, and it might be, oh yeah, one more. Perfect. It's a pleasure to be here with you tonight because I believe that a focus on improving attendance data will help Delaware reach our goal of improving student outcomes. I intend to show you the connection between attendance and academics tonight. I don't know how many of you are parents, but I'm sure that you all know or have a student in the Delaware education system that you care deeply about. Imagine learning that that student had been absent for 10% of the year, missing roughly a month of learning. You would be deeply concerned, right? Now, can you think of a campus building in our state that you care that passionately about? I would guess the answer is no. Why does the thought experiment matter? Well, for years at our schools, we've used an attendance metric that cares more about buildings than students. Average daily attendance reports have told us how full our buildings are each day, and those numbers are almost always above 90%, masking the full impact of post-COVID increases in student absenteeism. The summer after school gets out, we identify the individual students who have missed substantial amounts of learning. That delay has left students to fall through the cracks. But the good news is that we can build responsive data systems that help us proactively intervene to prevent chronic absenteeism and to increase the number of students whose attendance is on track. Making this shift will help all students, but particularly our most vulnerable populations. Next slide. In Brandywine School District, we are wrapping up year two of an attendance initiative focused on making sure students are in school each day. Much of this work is happening in our MTSS teams. At the tier one level, teams are working to make sure schools are safe and supportive and that students are excited and motivated to come to school in order to increase attendance overall. MTSS Tier 2 and 3 leaders are using student-level data to identify students with elevated attendance risk in order to take action. The best data work is collaborative. It is people work. I've highlighted Harlan Elementary on this slide because it was Harlan's counselor and social worker who helped me design this data tool for MTSS leaders based on what they needed to effectively identify students who need an attendance intervention and to track trends overall. Harlan in particular assigns all students in tier three to a counselor, social worker, or academic dean. Each support staff member then personally checks in with students to celebrate them when they're there and to quickly call home when they're absent. Next slide. Social work matters. HB 100 funded a social worker focused on student attendance in Brandywine last year who was split between two of our elementary schools. And those elementary schools were chosen and selected based on a look at our own attendance data. Those two schools saw an increase of 6 and 5 percentage points in on-track attendance in the social worker's first year, far outstripping the average improvements across our other 7 elementary schools. After seeing this data and hearing such positive praise from teachers at those schools, I had to go and meet with the social worker. Her focus on building relationships with families by helping them connect with vital services and by regularly checking in when kids are absent helps ensure our students have their foundational needs met. Next slide. I told you at the beginning of my presentation that I intended to show you the connection between attendance and academics. Our data in Brandywine shows that students missing more school between kindergarten and third grade are more likely to score a level 1 or well below on state tests. Among third graders who missed a week or less on average annually between kindergarten and third, only 12% scored in the lowest range for math, and 65% of those students demonstrated proficiency. But for students missing more than 3 weeks on average each year between K and three, more than half of students performed at the lowest level, and only 21% of them were proficient. Next slide. ELA data for last year's Brandywine third graders shows a similar pattern of decreasing academic performance as absences increase. While this was not a controlled research study, it still has strategic value to schools and districts looking to improve attendance academic outcomes. In Brandywine, we are continuing our work to improve the number of students with on-track attendance so that they can benefit from our core instructional work. Thank you.
Thank you, Hope. So next, we should have the early college high school at Del State. Are they?
And Naya's on.
Okay.
Hi, good evening, and thank you for inviting me to share a little bit about early college school. My name is Dr. Pritchett, and I serve as the principal for early college school at Delaware State University. If you can go to the next slide. So the information that we're sharing today is our attendance rates through the different grade levels. Early college serves scholars all over the state from grades 7 through 12. So we looked at data from the end of 2024 and then transitioning into Infinite Campus for 2025 and 2026. What we noticed, of course, throughout early college's existence is that our attendance historically stays over 91%, even with adding on the additional grade levels. So you'll notice that the overall attendance is highlighted in blue, the high school in green, and the middle school in red. So typical for high school and middle school grade levels, high school is a little bit lower than the middle school grade levels, but they're still hovering at around 92% by the end of this particular school year. Next slide. So just looking at another breakdown with this, what we have noticed for early college is that our kids, even though we serve the entire state of Delaware and they all come to Dover, they want to come to school. So you'll notice that with our middle school babies that are listed there in red, 93% of them are coming to school. They enjoy coming there. They have a connection. And for early college, you can go to the next slide. For early college, what we have really found is that the kids' sense of belonging is what encourages them to come to school. We do have a system in place in order to track our attendance for the scholars who may not be coming as regularly as we would like. And that system includes an attendance clerk. We contract with communities and schools, so we have a site director who is also on board, and our school counselors. We work together in order to track the attendance, make contacts with the parents, and then have attendance review meetings that also involve an administrator. But what really is important that stands out is that the focus of early college is all about preparing our scholars to take college-level courses at the university level of Del State, and they are doing just that. I just had the pleasure of graduating yet another class just last night, where 6 of our graduates were able to earn their associate's degree before they even earned their high school diploma. So last Friday, we attended the graduation ceremony for those 6 graduates walking across Del State stage to earn their associate's degree. Majority of our scholars, with about out of our class of 65, 58 of them are taking college-level courses and they're excelling. We're proud to say that the class of 2026 is the same as many other classes, where they've earned over 2,000 college credits in the course of their time that they've been with us. Over half of our scholars for this particular class started out with us in middle school. So it continues to show that because of the sense of belonging, the relationships that are built, early college continues to contribute to scholars wanting to come to school and doing well and earning the college credits and meeting the goals of what early college is all about. We have strong connections with our families. Oftentimes, our families, we know them by name, we know them by face. And once you're a part of our Hornet family, then we continue that on. Again, yesterday during our graduation ceremony, we celebrated and recognized one of our fallen scholars, and his family was there in order to receive the awards and recognitions on his behalf. Because again, once you're part of our family, you continue to be a part of our family. So we focus on having a college-going culture, building our relationships, inviting our families to not only be a part of it, but truly be ingrained with early college school as well. When we find that there is an issue because of the data that's being presented, then we intervene appropriately with the appropriate resources to get the scholars back on track. For some of them, it may be a transportation issue. For some of them, it may be other family needs that they may have presented, and we work with different resources to do that. Between working with the university and other community resources, we're able to provide supports to our families so that they can continue to not worry about some of those things when they come to school, but just focus on building the connections and doing well in their classes. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Pritchett. So you can go to the next slide, please. So the department's planning for school year 26-27 focuses on building stronger systems of support through collaboration, proactive engagement, data-informed decision-making, and equitable practices to help ensure every student is connected to school and positioned for success. And this will be through the 3 points that you see here, ensuring broad awareness of strategic plan goal and how the LEAs can partner and contribute. Also developing comprehensive guidance to support timely enrollment for historically underserved student groups. And providing additional technical assistance to the LEAs in the key areas, again, evidence-based practices, parent and family engagement, and data reporting and analysis. And at this point, you can go to the next slide, and I'll turn it over to Adam Schott, my associate secretary.
Well, I think I just have to close us out. I'll do that by starting with a huge thanks to both Brandywine and Early College Charter School for sharing their data. Obviously, very different LEAs in terms of size, grade configuration. But very similar approaches in terms of how they're engaging with their data, how they're engaging with students and families to set a strong culture around consistent school attendance every day. So under the secretary's leadership, she's always celebrating success. Last week, Harvard's education scorecard noted that Delaware has had one of the most significant reductions in chronic absence of any state in the country. So she celebrated that. And then she said, okay, let's get back to work and partner with every LEA to make sure that they've got the tools and resources so that we can all be working in the way that Early College and Brandywine are. So those will, that'll include additional data conversations over the course of the summer, planning for additional TA and professional development heading into the next school year so that we are working towards that strategic plan goal every day on behalf of every student. So I think we're happy to answer any questions and really appreciate the time today.
Thank you. That was a phenomenal presentation. Really appreciate it. I have a bunch of questions I want to quickly get in because I don't want to dominate this, but the presentation hope, your presentation, the linking it to the academics was really helpful. I guess I'm just curious, like there are some schools in our state, I just looked up Early College High School with 96% on track attendance, and then we have some schools where it's in the 50s and 60s. And so do we have a, I know we talked about the MTSS, but do we have a plan for those schools where they are, you know, 30, 40% of children are chronically absent?
I mean, everybody I think spoke to the connection between achievement and attendance. And so I think a lot of the schools that we are seeing that have very low rates of regular school attendance are schools that have been designated. I mean, we have a terrific accountability system. Here in Delaware, the secretary was in a position to see all 50 state accountability systems from her time in Washington. I was able to see those. And it's a really terrific system in that it's accounting for a range of academic and non-academic measures. And there's also a ton of overlap. So schools that we are seeing designated under our Title I plan for additional support because of low achievement also exhibit high rates of chronic absence. So the work that we are doing to provide on the ground TA, the additional Title I funding that those schools receive, how we're partnering with research partners to look at data and interrogate data to set year over year, month over month goals. So I think all of that comes together through our school improvement work.
Thank you. And then the last question for me, this is totally anecdotal, but Jim and I were at a school a few weeks ago, and we were leaving at like 9:15, 9:30, and first period had already wrapped, and there were 15 children coming in at that time. And so you said chronic absenteeism takes in if you missed more than half of the day. There's nothing really in here, but that also kind of scared me that it doesn't take into account the children who are missing first period, which might be reading or math. So just something to keep working on. Other questions, comments from board members?
Yeah, I have a question. Do we know some of the main reasons why students are absent? I've always been curious whether the districts are tracking beyond just the number absent as to why are they absent. And the reason I ask that is that at one point, while working with one of the schools in Wilmington, we had discovered a high rate of absenteeism in that school. And when we dug a little deeper, we found that many of the students were being sent home for uniform infractions, so that it really wasn't attached to a student being ill. It wasn't attached to misbehavior on part of the student. It was attached to a rule that was not thoughtfully being enforced in the school. And that once they resolved that, it did make a significant impact on their attendance numbers. And so that's why, I think it's essential to find out why are the students missing? Are we able to track that?
I mean, I think that's where, when we talked about the MTSS system, that's what we're trying to kind of support the schools. And you have to dig down to the root cause, like you said, because it could be something very unique or nuanced to a group of students or even an individual student that you need to try to problem solve for. And so that's where, when we're giving that technical assistance about MTSS, you do have to dig down. You have to maybe make the phone calls, the home visits, like those kinds of things to figure out what really is it. And sometimes it's something that you actually, I mean, I know just being in that boat that it is an easy fix sometimes, and sometimes it's a hard fix, but sometimes if you don't know, you can't solve those problems. So that's what we're trying to, and as the schools that shared Brandywine and Early College, looking at the data, digging in, getting to know your kids and your families, the social work piece that Hope kind of talked about, those are the pieces that schools are going to need to do to really figure out what it is and how to solve for it. So, yeah.
Excellent.
I wanted to see clarification. Did I hear this correctly, that students that are participating in work-based learning placements during the instructional day are being counted into this data?
Not necessarily. This is an opportunity where, as the state, we can offer technical assistance to make sure that that's not happening. As I mentioned, we only collect absenteeism data based on two things. It's either excused or unexcused. And so we want to work with the LEAs and make sure that they're not coding those incorrectly. We can kind of monitor that at during the summer months, during rollover, when we actually do accept appeals for schools, for students that have seen a number of chronically absent students. There are a number of ways that they can appeal those students. For example, students that are hospitalized, we don't want the school to be penalized for their accountability system. So that's an allowable appeal. And if things come across where I can see just that, I can correct and say, you don't want to map your data to this code. So we correct it at that time.
I've got a couple of comments and questions. With the I think going back to President Sheehan's comment about the MTSS tiered approach and kind of looking at the schools that might be struggling with the attendance and likely the accountability scores as well, is there a consideration to do like a DOE version of an MTSS kind of support? Is that what I'm hearing for those schools that are more considered red and yellow in their data side so that they're tagged with the higher level of support?
Yeah, that's what we're trying to, that's going into next school year. We just, was that yesterday or today? We were just getting some feedback from LEAs.
Yes, around, was that it's yesterday? A long week.
On our CCN meeting, we were just kind of serving out to get them to tell us, like, what are you seeing as some of your needs? How can we help and support? So then we want to plan out for next school year some of the things like you're talking about. More technical assistance, more professional learning, more how do you dig into your data, more get down to the root of the kids. So we, that's our plan for doing more of that. Yeah.
I think it also comes to how do you connect with your students, right? Because what we're hearing from the two schools is it is all about the sense of belonging. Students that feel like they belong show up. And so I think that is a huge thing just to make sure that the schools understand that seems so simple, but it's so profound in results. For Brandywine, with your data that you showed, was that specific to that one school where you connected the achievement and that was for all your elementary across the board?
Yeah. Okay. In January, I did just sort of a special dive into attendance data because for me, working in data, it's our earliest indicator of potential issues. So I just designed a study, again, not rigorous, not but action-oriented. So what I did, the scores are from all the third graders last year in Brandywine who had stable enrollment in the same building from kindergarten through third. So we're trying to control for some of the other factors sure. that might influence and also give us 4 years of attendance data. One of the things that national research tells us is that third grade is one of the highest attending grades of all the grades K to 12. So if you're just looking at, do I find a correlation between third grade attendance and outcome? Well, probably not. But kindergarten is one of the grades with the highest levels of chronic absenteeism. So by looking at their 4 year attendance pattern, and I presented it annually, so it's an average, but most of those students would have missed those days earlier on in their education. And you do see that connection. Again, this is not like a causal study, but it's quite clear that if students are consistently there and you see in math, which has the spiraling concepts, you benefit even more than an ELA from having fewer absences overall. So overall, the data set had about 500 kids and then broken down about a third of our kids fall into that category of having less than a week of absences annually from K to three. And those students, if they're receiving the academics, they are definitely learning and mastering it. And then you see the impact. It's not just at that cliff where you fall off past 10%. In all of the categories, there's increasing academic risk when you miss more days.
And that sort of data, I think, could be very useful to put out to parents. Because as a parent, if I saw that, it might make me think twice about allowing my child to stay home. And then the last question I have is for the data. There are times where kids get sick and we don't want them to go to school. They shouldn't go to school because then we're going to have everybody getting sick. Is there an accounting in the system for a student that is connecting remotely? While remote might not be as good as having them right there in the classroom, at least they're getting some of the education. I know when we dealt with COVID, we had the remote attendance capability. I just wonder, like, because some of the schools are going to have the students connecting remotely, some are not going to offer that. But for those that do, would they be able to count that child as present for the day
That's really a local board issue. If, again, they determine their own absence codes, and if that's what they say and they count that as a present day, then it doesn't get reported to us.
Okay. Thank you.
You know, coming from the local board, I can, as you were giving your data, I was thinking about a couple of the schools in our county that are at 30 or below 30%. How do you choose which schools or districts to partner with that need that support? How do you choose, or can we somehow contact you and say, hey, we need support over here? As an example, at Woodbridge, we need support over here. We're at 30%. Our kids aren't coming to school. We don't really understand why, but can you come over and give us some kind of support?
Well, for accountability, every year an accountability rate is run for every school. If it's a Title I school, it has to be an accountability school, and then, others are designated accountability schools. But every student in the state has to be accountable to an accountability school. So, every year, in the fall, when the state report cards come out, schools are aware of their accountability data. And as chronic absenteeism is one of those indicators, in my role in particular, I can they can certainly come to me and ask questions about the data, and I can show them, this is affecting your DSSF score. You scored particularly low in the SQSS indicator. Chronic absenteeism might be one of the ways that you can improve the school and thus improve your DSSF. But once every 3 years, and they get a score every year, but once every 3 years, according to ESSA, we do have to identify a school for comprehensive school support. And that is when the accountability office works with the school support office. And then they're actually doing a needs assessment based on their data, and they are working through an action plan of the data points that they want to address. So we're in the middle of that now. The next identification year is 2027. So schools are right now in the implementation timeline of how to it. So some of those that may have been identified in 2024 and chronic absenteeism was particularly high for them, hopefully they're working through that, with the state strategies that we offered last year, as Dr. Huey mentioned, the learning series that Attendance Works brought to the state, and we continue to do that professional development. Hopefully they're using those strategies. So in 2027, we will see that improvement, or they're seeing it all along, but that's the next identification year. So.
And just one thing, I mean, the accountability system does a good job, I think, of designating schools that need support, doesn't designate every school that needs support. And so there's no, the secretary says there's no wrong door to walk in. So if you're working with an LEA that's exhibiting high rates of chronic absence, tell us. And if it's a data and analytics issue, Laura's team can help. If it's a school that has, for instance, high numbers of students experiencing homelessness, that's where Dr. Huey can step in. So whatever we would look at the specific challenge in that building and then design TA that's responsive to what they're going through.
Perfect.
Reach out anytime.
Absolutely.
Reverend Banks's question in mind, though, has any thought been given to possibly holding a summit on chronic absenteeism, similar to, what we've done in the past on other topics like AI and so forth, which would heighten awareness of the problem itself by having a one day at least focused convening around chronic absenteeism, where also people like Hope could come with their solutions and their data to share with a broader community that goes beyond just identifying the CSI and TSI schools, but would be making these strategies available to all districts, to all schools, to all educators that may also then, proclaim, I think, the state's seriousness and heighten, here again, this is what's in our strategic plan. This is a priority, but also then providing resources to help people and carry that message a bit further.
Yeah. So I don't know that we fully had landed on a summit, but I think along those lines, we're thinking about like our statewide professional development day that we have September 15th this year. It moves around a little bit. But anyway, how do we incorporate some of these strategies into the sessions that we're offering? Because again, going to impact, you know, academic outcomes as well. So we're kind of building out that plan of like, what does that professional development, what does the technical assistance look like? We want to look at the data, what LEAs, what schools are, you know, popping as area of concern, personal kind of reach outs to say, hey, like, we're seeing what your data is looking like, you know, we have these things we can offer to you. So that's kind of, we want to sort of beef up what we're doing and our support and kind of, you know, have those touch points with those schools and districts. Yeah.
Questions from board members? That was wonderful presentation. Dr. Pritchett Hope, thank you so much for joining us. DOE team, thank you so much for putting that together.
Thank you.
We'll move on to item three, charter schools. 3A, we have a charter school update for information. We have Leroy Travers, director of the charter school office, here this evening to provide updates on the work of the charter school office. Mr. Travers, thank you for your written report. If you have any further updates to share with us.
I do not have further updates, but I would like to just extend a thank you, an extreme thank you to Mr. Sheehan and Ms. Stevens for jumping in at the ready when we received Gateway's major modification to make sure that we had state board representation on that CSAC should have taken place, which it did. So, but thank you for being so responsive and being ready to jump in. So. And my offer stands for some TA on the CSAC process before we get to renewals with Academy of Dover coming up next year. Outside of that, I'm ready for questions.
Questions from the board for Mr. Travers? All right, thank you so much. All good.
Thank you.
We'll move on to item four, regulations. 4A, professional standards board regulations for discussion or action. We have Dr. Linnea Bradshaw, executive director of the PSB. She will review two regulations for action and present two for information. Dr. Bradshaw, welcome.
Thank you so much. We have special education regulations 1571, special education teacher of students with disabilities. That is a K-12 certification. That is generally an add-on certification with a content cert in 1573, teacher of students with autism or students with severe intellectual disabilities. And so a couple of districts, as well as the DSEA, had come to us a while back, and we had also gotten a petition from the board, a petition to the PSB to revise these regulations because the pathways are a little bit broken, especially with the teacher students with autism and severe intellectual disabilities. And one of the board deliberated on this at its, I believe it's January and February meetings, and decided that they wanted to do two things. They wanted something they could do quickly and something that they would do more long-term. And the one thing that they could do more quickly that was identified by several school districts was to allow for reciprocity for special education teachers that come from out of state who are fully qualified from out of state, but they may not have that content area certification that Delaware requires. So that has been a significant stumbling block for a while. And so the changes to these regulations take away that for reciprocity. And then it also adds, and this will hopefully be a little more long-term, for the students with autism and severe intellectual disabilities certification allows for the pathway for a degree with a concentration to allow a person to hold that certification as a standalone cert without having to go through the other certifications first. However, that was going to require building degree programs, so working with the higher eds to do those kinds of things. I'm repeating because I'm not sure. We've got a couple of new people here, and so I don't know how much you heard about this at the last meeting for information, but the board feels good about this. They also are, we are going to probably try to create some sort of working group to look at these regulations a little bit more long-term and come up with some really comprehensive long-term solutions to help with our educator supply. So that is 1571 and 73. They were both published On April 1st, we received comments. All the comments were supportive of the regulation changes.
Questions from the board for Dr. Bradshaw? Or is there a motion regarding regulations 1571 and 1573?
I just have a question for a point of order. Can we vote? Do we need to vote on them independently, or can we do?
Yeah, I asked that last time, and I was told to do them together.
So I make a motion that we approve regulation 1571 and 1573 as presented.
Motion by Mr. Simmons. Is there a second?
Second, Griffin. Stevens.
I think Vice President Stephen beat you there, Meredith. So motion by Board Member Simmons, second by Vice President Stevens. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Now there are two published on May 1st.
Yes.
The 1520 early childhood teacher and 1570 early child exceptional children special education teacher were both published on May 1st. And so those are kind of a pair because most of our early childhood, our pre-K public school early childhood programs are for students with disabilities as well as their typical peers. But they have that geared toward that. So people generally pursue dual certification in those areas. And so one of the main reasons that this is coming for you now is the fact that the early childhood exam, they were renewing and refreshing the early childhood exam. We did an internal review of that with the early childhood team. They did not like the new exam. And so we spent several months trying to troubleshoot options. And so one of the things that we ended up doing was I said, we have the option to not have an exam for this certification. But at the same time, they reviewed the early childhood special education exam. And they did like that. They thought that was actually more appropriate. That was really appropriate to that early childhood special education job. And so what we did is we're actually taking the exam out of the early childhood cert, putting it into the early childhood special education cert. However, because of some technical issues, we actually put both exams into the early childhood special education, just because there are people in programs who may have taken the early childhood cert or the early childhood test, who now would find that test to be, if we just made a hard switch, would find that test to be useless. And then now you have to take another one to be early childhood special education certified. So by adding that test into 1570, we're able to make a smooth transition out of that for anyone who's already taken the test, so they don't have to take two. So that was a design issue. You know, it can get a little bit complicated, but we think that we have this mastered for moving forward. And in addition to that, there are future iterations. This may end up being a singular cert at some point. It may end up also with reciprocity into a new early care and education licensure system as they're working toward their licensure system. So we're going to be trying to make sure that at least some of what they are doing in the early care and education can feed into and have reciprocity with what we are doing on our public pre-K side, because eventually they might all be the same. We don't know. So that is in the future work. So that's not in this regulation.
I don't know if it's clarification or just a question, but are there folks who have a certification early childhood separate from those who have one in early childhood for exceptional children?
There are some. However, the districts and charters, I don't know if there are charters with PK programs. I know they have care. So it is a birth to grade two. So there are people working in charter elementary schools who have this certification. But generally speaking, there may be, but then when they get in there, they have to add on the other certification because of the fact that they are in a special ed setting, because all of our PK programs are special ed.
Right, so that I guess that's why I was a little confused. Like, and I heard you say there's an appetite to combine into one.
Yeah.
I just wonder for districts, could that be a foxhole that someone falls into by accident because of this separation of the two, when it sounds like it might be?
It can be. I have heard, we do have some add-on programs because there are some people come in from other states. They might have an early childhood piece and then they would need to add on the special ed. So this is a space where we're really looking for more clarity, more continuity, just a little better pathway.
Yeah, just concern for the district tracking for that sort of thing, right? So just that's why I was said, I'm not sure if it's a question or a clarification, but thank you.
No questions or comments from the board? Thank you, Dr. Bradshaw.
Thank you very much.
All right, we have no Department of Education regulations on the agenda this evening, so we will move on to regulation and public comment. Time has been set aside at this point in the agenda for public comment on regulations. Ms. Rizzell and Ms. French, are there any public comments on regulations? Or not? All right, we'll move on to item five, the Secretary's report. Secretary Martin.
Hi, everybody. My sound okay?
Yep.
Okay, great. Thank you. I already submitted my written report, but like I always like to just do the go over some of the highlights from the report in case you didn't have a chance to see it, and pull out some of the things that I think are top of mind for us right now as a state as we move forward. That attendance presentation just made me so happy that you got to hear some more data. As you saw in my report, I just finished data dive meetings with each of the chiefs. That was in my report. But you may have seen the new, Adam Schott referenced it, the Education Recovery Scorecard that was released recently with Harvard, Stanford. It showed very encouraging signs of movement in Delaware. I want to be really clear about that. What does that actually mean? In this scorecard, Delaware ranked fourth in the nation in math recovery and 14th in the nation in reading recovery. And this is between 2022 and 2025. So, and then it also mentioned chronic absenteeism. It said that chronic absenteeism in Delaware declined from nearly 25% to just over 16%. These are important signals, but I have to be super clear, that's not a victory lap. But what it's saying, and Adam Schott mentioned this too, that we are moving faster by this report than some other states. We already know, and I have said it very clearly in pretty much every forum I have a chance to, that our students remain below pre-pandemic achievement levels, especially in reading. That's why we have a literacy emergency. That's why we have the Bridge to Practice grants. That's why we have the early literacy playbook. The moving to implementation and science of reading and improving instruction is addressing what we already know around reading. But what this report is saying is that we are moving in the right direction, and the momentum and the speed by which we're moving since 2022 is faster than some other states. And what it tells us is not that Delaware has arrived, but it tells us that since 2022, that movement is possible. And I know that's when instruction, attendance, support, and accountability are all aligned. That's why you see movement. And there were district examples in the report that were worth paying attention to. As Deb pointed out, why don't we look at what's working? Where do we have it going well? In this report in particular, Seaford, for example, continues to show growth with low-income math performance. And then we're seeing progress in places like Woodbridge, Brandywine, Apo. These are very different contexts, as we know, very different communities, as we know. But this report showed a common thread. What works there is disciplined implementation, which is the backbone of our approach with our strategic plan in Delaware. Since Woodbridge, I wanted to point out that I just mentioned I met with each of the superintendents in data meetings. Woodbridge actually made some incredible progress in chronic absenteeism pre-COVID, and this was not the accountability numbers. This was the numbers I'm tracking for 10% more days missed. Woodbridge was at 15.2% before COVID, and they're currently at 3.2% for chronic absenteeism. They made the most growth. And the Stanford-Harvard report, this scorecard shows some of that, and it lines up with the meetings that I just recently had with each of the superintendents to talk about the key metrics in our strategic plan. I think that all of this reinforces the direction we're taking as a state. If I say it once, I say it twice, I say it 100 times. Consistency and implementation, strong tier one instruction, that is the heart. Evidence-based literacy practices, transparent data, focus on attendance, use what's working, and have clear accountability for the results. So, as you know, our strategic plan is not a collection of initiatives or shiny new toys. It's an effort to bring coherence to the work that matters for our students. We're continuing to build these systems that support the long-term success. And that is what you'll know is the public, you may have paid attention to recently this past week. The Public Education Funding Commission last month actually approved the recommendations to modernize Delaware school funding system. And then earlier this week, the Senate unanimously passed Senate Bill 302, a very important step towards implementation of a new hybrid funding formula. I will never say looking at a data sheet or looking at a national report or passing a new funding formula is the only path to progress, but these are strong indicators, and Delaware getting a funding system that allows flexibility and accountability and the resources to be directed to where there's greatest need. It's not just policy work, it's implementation work. If we want different outcomes for our students, which we all do, then our resources have to align more closely to our students' needs, and our systems have to be built to support the execution over time. So, in the spirit of execution, the other thing I put in my report to you was at the center of these meetings that I had last week with every district superintendent in Delaware. I love that about Delaware, that as the state chief or as your secretary of education, I can actually meet with all of the superintendents. Some states are so big, I think it would take the whole year to do that. These meetings that I had one-on-one with each of the chiefs, and some brought members of their team, some did not. We looked at data snapshots from the strategic plan. These were not compliance meetings. You heard about that from Adam and his team, from CSI, TSI, that work continues. These were working sessions with me and the leaders of the districts grounded in student data. We reviewed the progress on grade three reading, grade three math, grade eight math achievement, graduation rates, attendance rates, or chronic absenteeism, teacher retention, and school performance on DSSF. Those are some of the key metrics that I mentioned in my last report to you. But more importantly, I asked the hard questions and we had good conversations. What does this data look like inside your classrooms? What is changing instructionally inside the classrooms? What will be different 12 months from now for students? How are you leveraging the resources that you've had and tying them to the results that you're seeing? If you're not, how are you pivoting? Because strategy only matters and funding only matters if it changes practice, and practice closest to the student, giving teachers what they need to teach the very students that are in front of them. That is how you turn a statewide plan on a piece of paper to district level in execution. Clear data, clear expectations, targeted support, and shared accountability for the results. So I want to just take a moment to recognize the educators and the school staff across Delaware, because that's the way that we get the work done. We celebrated Teachers of the Year this month. We celebrated the Education and Supports Professionals of the Year, the Behavioral Professionals, Health Professionals of the Year. And during Teacher Appreciation Week alone, we shared more than 150 messages of gratitude from students, families, and colleagues. When we talk about data and outcomes and results, we immediately talk about the support for the educators and the people that are in the buildings every day doing the work to make sure they have the support they need to get the outcomes our kids deserve. This is not a blame a teacher. This is a support a teacher. This is working with principals and superintendents and celebrating them this month and thanking them for what they do is my favorite thing every year. And those messages, if you have not seen the messages that were posted on our social media that people sent in, just check them out. They're amazing. We know that student success is very deeply connected to the adults that show up every day to teach. They support, they provide counseling, they encourage, they believe in them. I also had a chance to participate in the Delaware Pathway Summit alongside education, workforce, business leaders, the whole ecosystem. And that's where we focused on how does Delaware move from a nationally recognized pathways model, which we are, to a results-driven talent system. We want it more aligned, more connected to the workforce demand, and more accountable for outcomes. And those were my comments at the Pathway Summit. We also continue to strengthen Building Block 2, safe and supportive schools. Last month, we had over 100 participants from districts, charters, private schools, all participated in a statewide school safety exercise that's intended to strengthen emergency preparedness and coordination. These are all things that you should be doing in a proactive way, on a regular basis, not in a reactive way, because students learn best, as we know, when schools are not only academically strong, but physically and emotionally safe. And that happens by these kinds of exercises that we just had. One of my favorite moments this month was joining almost 80 students who signed their letters of intent to pursue careers in education. That was through our Educators Rising program, Grow Your Own, doing it very well here in Delaware. Students are choosing teaching at a moment when the country is talking so much about educator shortages. This is worth paying attention to. It's a best practice, and it's a long-term investment in Delaware's future. And over the next couple of weeks, I will have the privilege of attending graduation ceremonies across Delaware. I can't wait to see our students walk across the stages or receive their accolades and their diplomas. These moments are always very grounding. Help us get connected to the why of what we're doing, because behind every metric, every strategic plan target, every policy conversation, there is a student that is ready to do what comes next for them to be contributing members of our beloved communities. Our job is to make sure they leave our system prepared for it, and I look forward to the graduations in the weeks ahead. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks so much, Secretary Martin. Questions or comments from the board? All right. Seeing none. Thank you so much, Secretary.
I love questions. We could talk about that. Okay. We'll talk more.
The
You
answer
know
to
where
them
to find
all.
me. You know where to find me. Always grounded in data and always want to keep the receipts and show them. Accountability matters. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you so much. Item 6, State Board Business. We will start, as we do during legislative session, with a chance to ask questions and raise discussions about education-related bills. So we have Donna Harris-Akins, Associate Secretary of Government External Affairs, to provide information. Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, everybody. But yes, they're actually just across the street still. I wanted to, you have my written report, but wanted to update a couple of things that just happened this afternoon. Specifically, HB 350, homeschool bill, just passed the House today, and Senate Bill 253 around parental notification for school bullying policies also passed the House today. There are a couple of bills on here that are teed up for the governor to sign, but I will not provide that update until there's actually a signature. But did want to double click on something that the secretary mentioned, and that was the PEFC bills, 302 and 303. So they have now cleared the Senate. They now need to go to the House, and that will happen at the beginning of June. And there's an entire, if you've been following this, and I know the members of PFC also are aware of this. There's an entire implementation process that has to be attached, that will be attached to this should the bills be signed. And since most people, I think, anticipate that something will come out on the other end of this, we at DOE have already started that process, and we've been talking to LEAs about that process as well. So more to come.
Questions, comments from the board?
Yes, Mr. President, I do. I had on my list, I had HB 350 on my list to ask about just for a bit of clarity. I'm trying to understand. So this is just kind of directing the department to begin to look at how this could happen is the way I read it there. So the only action to come out of this, if it passes both chambers, is a study. Am I reading that correctly? About the homeschool extracurricular.
Yes, you are reading that correctly.
Okay. And you said it just passed the House today.
Just passed the House today, yes.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else from the board? All right, thank you so much, Don, as always. 6B committee meeting reports. In a moment, we'll have an opportunity for discussion on board priorities, but first, there is an opportunity for members to provide information and written reports made available on eBoard on any events or committee meetings attended since the last meeting. Would anyone like to share anything further? Tyler, kick us off.
Thank you very much. I'm not going to repeat anything that has already been said, but all of you have my report in front of you. As mentioned previously, the PEFC had a historic recommendation a few weeks ago to the General Assembly on the new hybrid funding formula. This is truly a right step in the, or a step in the right direction towards ensuring equality for our students, ensuring that they have the needs that they have to fulfill their education successfully. I was also proud to be on the floor of the Senate with members of the commission, as well as Secretary Martin, of course, to see the passage of Senate Bill 302 and 303. I was also there Tuesday to see the recognition of charter schools in the House on Tuesday afternoon, as well as from Green. We had the charter school rally where I joined over 200 charter school students celebrating the immense success that our charter schools have had and the needs that they or that the services that they provide to our students. Taking a look to early April, I participated in the first AI Assurance Lab Steering Committee meeting. This is a committee that is responsible and designed to ensure that we are responsibly implementing AI into education and that we are doing this in a way that is going to be beneficial to our students. Then taking a look to career and technical education, this has been a board priority for us as I came to the board, and I was proud to go to the DECA International Career Development Conference with many of our Delaware students and the Business Professionals of America National Leadership Conference in Nashville, Tennessee. Now you can see some of the numbers that are here. This is truly representative of the success of our programs here in Delaware. Delaware, of course, we know is a very small state. You heard Delaware in the winnings of the competition a lot more than you heard bigger states like New York, California, Texas. Again, we have 436 middle school finalists, 397 high school finalists, 55 of our middle schoolers were top 10 in their events, 46 of our high schoolers were top 10, 7 national champions in the middle school division, and 4 national champions in the high school division. Our career technical education programs are truly working. They are preparing our students for careers in a world-class workforce and truly setting them up for what may come next for them. And I cannot be more proud of them. On the second page, you have some highlight schools that had the most winners throughout the process of these competitions. Taking a look to the end of my term now, we have begun the process of selection for the next student member of the State Board of Education. I wanted to give a special good luck and just best wishes to any and all of the applicants that are pursuing this process. I could not recommend this position anymore. It has truly been the honor of a lifetime to serve in this position. And last but not least, I will end with giving a special shout out to the members of the class of 2026. We are officially in graduation season. I will be celebrating my last day of school tomorrow, thankfully. So truly, I want to give just a shout out for all the amazing work, the hard work, dedication that it has taken to get through the last 4 years to all the members of the class of 2026. Whether it is the workforce, whether it is a gap year, whether it is further education or the military or whatever you have planned for yourself, I wish you all the best of luck, and I truly cannot wait to see what this class will do in the world. And last but not least, as I prepare to end my term here in just shy of a month, my commitment to our students in the state of Delaware remains unwavering. Until the very last second, I will continue to work at 110% and ensure that our students' voices are represented in every conversation. And I want every single student in the state of Delaware to know that our voices are always valued and always needed in educational policy. Thank you.
And we have you at the next meeting, correct?
Yes. Yes. I will be here for the next meeting, and the next student member will join you in July.
Thank you so much, as always, for such a thorough report. Are there reports from board members?
Yeah, I do want to, I think following on what Tyler has just said, give you an update on the selection process for the next student board member. We were excited this year to have 35 applicants for the position, which really it was an outstanding number to receive. And I have to admit, very challenging reading through the applications to select just 13 of them to interview. This week, we completed the interview process. In fact, we completed it today and have made a decision on the four student names that we will send to the governor's office. The next step will be that the governor will then interview the four student names, or the four students that whose names he's received. And hopefully by June the 18th, we'll have made a decision as to which student will be the next student to work with the State Board of Ed. Let me say, Tyler, you have a fan club, because I can't tell you how many students in their papers or in their interviews reference Tyler, reference that, oh, if they were to be the student selected, he'd be the first person that they would go to in order to find out what this job was really, really like. And so I want you to know that very clearly you have made an impact with your peer group, because they look to you as a source of information, but also a role model and somebody they'd like to emulate. So very, very clearly you've had that impact. So hopefully by the middle of June, we will know the name of the next student member that will be joining us in July. One other piece, while I was traveling, I did have the opportunity to do a school visit, which I always love if you can do a school visit in other places. Well, this one was in Alphatran, Bulgaria. And it was very, very interesting to see how much schooling mattered to a very small community that was losing a lot of their young adults because there was limited economic opportunity in this small village. And so they were struggling to keep their K to eight school of 94 students going. The class sizes were small, yet the dedication of the staff in that school was absolutely remarkable. We had an opportunity to hear the students in their classes as they were participating in science, and going to an English class where they were learning how to read in English, and the joy in this one little boy that was just so proud to show me the three sentences he was able to read in his book in English, and the beaming face he had when I said, "You did a great job." The excitement of those kids to be in that school, a school where they're just now getting computers, to have a computer lab, a school where STEM is important. It was amazing. Everything else was in Bulgarian, and yet STEM was spelled out in English. And so you know the importance of education in these communities, but it also makes me appreciate all that we have here in the United States. We're so quick to criticize and so quick to put down. And yet when you see people with so little valuing education so much to keep striving to keep it going, it really does make a difference. I'll tell you, I recommend if you have a chance in other places to visit schools, go there. It's always amazing to see what's going on in other countries.
Amazing. Other comments?
I don't have a report, but just to piggyback off Deb's comments, I was asked to speak on a panel about a month or so ago at the University of Delaware where they had visiting teachers from all around the world, and got to have some of the similar conversations around how different education value treated, those different things. Nothing particular for me to share out, but it was interesting to hear. Not only were there some differences, there were also some similarities, right? And so it was just interesting. I want to say there were 13 different countries represented in the meeting. So was it just interesting? So to solidify this.
Well, I also joined Board Member Simmons. We did on Friday, May 8th, we visited five schools to drop off a small gift just to thank the educators for everything that they do. So we started out at actually the Early Education Center in North Wilmington. We then were at Carcroft, Maurice Pritchett Senior Academy, First State Montessori, and Carrie Downey. Really fun to just get to go see educators during Teacher Appreciation Week and thank them on behalf of the board. So really enjoyed that. I also joined the Teacher Pathway Showcase that I was on a panel with Dr. Scott, and it was a great job that DOE did putting that together. So just appreciate everything, and hopefully more good work in the next month to come. Any other updates from the board? All right, we'll move on to item C, priorities discussion. Each regular meeting agenda will have a specific presentation and/or discussion aligned with our five board priorities, plus opportunity for discussion on initiatives. So we discussed the last meeting the idea of taking action on a recommendation around legislation for an additional student member. The board has discussed in the past adding a student member for a while now, and the idea is to have a junior and a senior serve on the board so that when the senior graduates, the junior moves up each spring and the governor appoints a rising junior to serve. Before we get to questions and comments from the board, Tyler, this has been a priority of yours. Do you want to kick this conversation off?
I'm locked and loaded and prepared to go. Today, we have the opportunity to continue a conversation that the board has already begun, a conversation about strengthening and sustaining student voice within educational policymaking. On June 13th, 2025, I received a call from the governor's office asking me to serve as the eighth student member of the Delaware State Board of Education. Since that day, over the last 11 months, I've had the privilege of engaging with legislators, policymakers, nonprofit organizations, educators, and most importantly, students across our state. And throughout all those conversations, one thing has become very clear to me: student voice matters. This position is unique because it is not a role that someone simply walks into fully understanding. There is a learning curve, there is relationship building, there is policy work, public engagement, and understanding the complexities of education systems at the state level. That is why I believe moving towards a structure with both an 11th grader and a 12th grade student member serving overlapping terms would strengthen this board tremendously. It creates continuity, it creates mentorship, and it allows institutional knowledge and student perspective to carry from year to year instead of restarting annually. Several states across the country have already enacted similar student representation structures because they recognize the value of sustained student engagement and continuity in leadership. In 2025, approximately 60 students applied for this role. 12 were interviewed, and three finalists were sent to the governor for possible appointment. Delaware has no shortage in talented, qualified student leaders ready to serve. And one thing I want to be very clear on today, at this table, we are not legislating. We are not making a final decision. Today, we are simply considering whether to ask the Associate Secretary for Government and in extra, not extra, External Affairs to work alongside our partners and members of the General Assembly to explore possible legislation that could eventually result in the addition of a second student member to the Delaware State Board of Education. There are many steps ahead. This change will not happen today, but today can be a step in the right direction if we are willing to continue moving forward and willing to strengthen student representation within this work. When I look across this table, I see tremendous experience and leadership, but I also see an opportunity to further strengthen the visibility and sustainability of student voice within Delaware's educational policymaking landscape. I encourage my fellow board members to support this conversation and to vote yes. Thank you.
Are there other comments from the board? Is there a motion?
I'm not sure that his title statements were motionable, I guess, for lack of a better word. But I at the last meeting, I spoke very clearly that I'm hugely in favor of having two board members, just two student board members, excuse me. And Tyler, eloquent words. I don't know, like, who you're trying to convince, because you're not trying to convince me, right? And so, I think the conversation that we had, I haven't heard anyone on our board who's opposed to it. So your words, well written, well spoken, but I don't know that they were even needed to convince us, right? And so I think it's just a matter of the process. So I don't know what the motion would be, especially when the
Yeah, I think it'd be a motion to ask the Associate Secretary to work the General Assembly on a bill to add a second student member.
So I was also under the impression that we did that last meeting, so maybe I'm confused.
We discussed the last meeting. There was general agreement. We said we would add it so that the board formally
got the position. Gotcha.
That's the motion we're speaking
of. So I make a motion that we forward a request to the department and the associate secretary to investigate legislation around adding a second student member to Delaware State Board of Education.
Perfect. Motion made by Board Member Simmons. There, second?
Right, second.
Second by Reverend Banks. Any further discussion?
Yeah, my further discussion would just be for process. How involved will or should the board be in the crafting of what this looks like? I know our conversation to this point has talked about a junior and a senior. I can imagine, and I don't want to say this is my fear, but this leads to my question, that once this gets to the General Assembly, out of whatever recommendation is written by the appropriate associate secretary, that it's now out of our hands and it can look markedly different from what our intention is in what we are looking to do right now. So my question is a general one. After we take the action that we are taking tonight, what happens from the state board's standpoint about what this looks like ultimately?
Yeah, it's a good question. I to your point, it is definitely a bit out of our hands once, you know, a bill gets written. But I think, John, if you're able to sort of keep us in the loop and maybe work with us, to kind of craft what maybe a one page on what this looks like, and then just kind of keep the board in the loop each step of the way, so we can make sure we're in support of what's going on and that if there are changes, we're at the table. I think that probably makes the most sense, but I'm open to other thoughts and suggestions from folks.
Yeah, the only reason I'm saying it is because I know that we've had this discussion prior to our current student member. We've had this discussion for the almost 3 years that I've been on the board. And so I know that members of the board present and members of the board past have kind of a vision for what this looks like. But I also know that we don't craft, neither do we pass legislation. So once this is done, what we've said, once it gets into the hands of whoever the sponsors in both chambers are going to be, it doesn't have to look anything like what we've talked about, but we'll be living with whatever comes out of this.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think my hope is that this is a topic that hopefully, like the board is supportive of, that hopefully members of the General Assembly would find it also something that's just a genuinely good idea. Other comments or questions or concerns from the board? All right, we had a motion by Board Member Simmons, a second by Reverend Banks. All those in favor for making the recommendation to the Associate Secretary to explore legislation to add a second student member, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Next, we'll move on to item 7, formal public comment. Time has been set aside at this point in the agenda for general public comment. Do we have anyone signed up for public comment?
Yes, we do. We have Kendall Massett.
Okay. Kendall, before you get going, we're going to hear from speakers from the sign-up sheet who are present in the meeting room first, and then we'll recognize speakers logged in via the URL in that order that they've signed up in the chat box. Comments should be limited to 2 minutes for individuals, 3 for organizations. As a reminder, the board typically will not respond to questions or engage in any dialogue with those offering comment during the board meeting. Kendall, you are up.
Good evening. Kendall Massett, Executive Director for the Delaware Charter Schools Network. How is it May? How is it May? And we are quickly moving towards June. We've already had 285 charter school students graduate from two of our schools. And next week and the week after, I will be attending two graduations with the secretary. One of those is personally important to me, as our youngest is graduating from high school next week. Sorry. So this week was important. This week was amazing, as Tyler said. First up, Tyler, absolutely. Amen. Student voice matters, which is why, and I redid the numbers, Tyler, you were with me and over 250 students from nine of our charter schools on the green, so that they could talk about why they love their charter schools, they could perform, they could sing and speak and do art and play, but also hear these words, that the building that was right in front of them had 62 legislators inside of it, that need to listen to them, that their voice matters, that when they want to have an impact on themselves, they need to raise their voice with the legislators that make the laws. And so after that rally, eight students, including Tyler, went in with me with some adults, and we sat on the floor in the House of Representatives. Then, while Tyler was on the floor in the Senate, I took the seven other students upstairs and we sat in the balcony and we listened to the debate for the PEFC bills. And we talked about why that was important to them and what it meant to them. And they understood and they were so happy to be there, because education should not be done to students. It should be done with them. And that's what we've been doing with our Student Advisory Council. And I'm so proud of Tyler for lifting his voice and telling students that they need to lift their voice too. So thank you, State Board of Education, for considering adding another student voice to your board, because it does matter. And that action you just took is important. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Is there anyone else signed up for public comment? Okay, so at this point, we're going to move on to item eight and consider going into executive session. Is there a motion to move into executive session for the board?
I move that we go into executive session.
Motion by Dr. Marinucci. Is there a second?
Simmons, second.
Second by Mr. Simmons. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? The board will now enter executive session. We are sure. Okay. Is there a motion to move back into open session?
Simmons, so moved.
Motion by Mr. Simmons, is there a second?
Second, Stevens.
Second by Vice President Stevens. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, we are back in public session. Just for transparency, we had a little technical difficulties coming back from the executive session. So we do have Dr. Griffin here by phone. So we do have everyone now. Item A, we considered Student Appeal 2026-05 in executive session. Is there a motion regarding Student Appeal 2026-05?
I'll make a motion that in the matter of Student Appeal 2026-05, I move that we reject the hearing officer's recommendation.
Motion by Vice President Stevens. Is there a second?
Second, Simmons.
Second by Mr. Simmons. Is there discussion? All right. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Item B, Executive Director finalist. Is there a motion to, or we discussed the Executive Director finalist in executive session. Is there a motion to offer the Executive Director position to the applicant discussed in executive session?
Marinucci, so moved.
Motion by Dr. Marinucci. Is there a second?
Simmons, second.
Second by Mr. Simmons. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions?
Abstain.
Can we call roll just to confirm since we had an abstention?
Absolutely. Reverend Banks?
Yes.
Dr. Griffin?
Abstain.
Okay. Dr. Marinucci?
Yes.
Ms. Simmons?
Yes.
Ms. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Sheehan?
Yes. All right, 5 votes yes, the motion carries. Next item, adjournment. Our next regular meeting is June 18th in the Townsend Building in Dover. Is there a motion to adjourn tonight's meeting?
Stevens, so moved.
Motion by Vice President Stevens, is there a second?
Marinucci, second.
Second by Dr. Marinucci. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? It is now 7:37 p.m. and the meeting is adjourned.
We're adjourned, Brother Griffin.